Good afternoon. Welcome to the last session of the first day of Tech Ed Russia 2012. I'm Larry Lieberman. I'm a product manager at Microsoft in Redmond. Today we're going to be talking about the new mapping and location features in Windows Phone 8 that are available for you as developers to include in your applications that you write for the phone. How many of you are software developers and write for the phone today? Because we are going to talk. Great, that's great. And you write for the phone today, like on 7 or on 8? Have any of you started with 8? Gotten the new 8 SDK yet? It's been out for a little while. Just very few of you. I don't know about you, but some of my favorite smartphone apps are the ones that use location and mapping. And it seems to me that some of the greatest opportunities for innovation in building applications for the phone, people have their phones with them wherever they go. And we provide a lot of experiences built in on the phone around mapping, turn by turn direction, for example. But there's so much opportunity for more. And in Windows Phone 8, we've done a lot to really radically expand what you can do with maps and location on the phone. And so that's what I'm going to talk to you a little bit about today. I think it's perhaps one of the most important developer features. And you know, we've done a lot of work here because of that. So I'm pretty excited about that. Let's, there we go. So the structure of the talk today, we're going to talk about four main areas, really. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about what the APIs themselves are. Location, with regard to location, the location service APIs, the new ones in Windows Phone, the existing ones, which you should use, how you should use them. Next, we'll talk a little bit about the new map control and the new map services. So we have a new map control in Windows Phone 8 that leverages the Nokia Maps online service. And so there are a lot of new offerings as a result of that, a lot of new capabilities. We'll go into that in depth. The third item here about, we'll talk about location tracking in the background. And Windows Phone, you know, 7.0 came out. We initially did not have much in the way, we didn't really have a way for applications to perform processes in the background. In 7.5, we added a number of new ways for applications to do this, to conduct different sorts of processes in the background. But there were two big ones that we weren't able to deliver in 7.5. Location tracking was one of them, and the other one is VoIP. And now in Windows Phone 8, we're providing support for both of these. So you can now continue, you can write your applications, your location applications, turn-by-turn navigation in particular, to continue to perform those operations, even if the user moves away from your app, which is really important if you think about the fact that I may be navigating around with my phone, and I get a phone call, for example. Since it is a phone, the user will navigate away from your app to take the phone call, and they don't even have to go back to your app. Your app can continue to operate in the background now. Faster Zoom is a fourth topic we'll go into. This is another new offering in Windows Phone that's actually much bigger than just mapping and location, but it's very, very interrelated with it, and so we'll touch on that. Before I get in depth here, I want to talk a little bit about the Windows runtime in Windows Phone, just for those of you who aren't familiar with it. You know, we first talked about the Windows runtime as WinRT back at Build in 2011 with regard to Windows 8. So the Windows runtime, it's actually not just a runtime. There is a runtime execution engine, but you could think of it as an evolution of the COM programming model in some ways, because what it provides is a new way to expose APIs and a new set of class libraries and project them to a variety of different programming languages. There's really three components to this. There's that actual runtime, there are the class libraries, and then there's also this sort of COM interop layer that projects them. In Windows Phone 8, we are now based on the shared Windows core. And so Windows Phone and desktop Windows have a lot in common here. We share this runtime, and we share a large number of class libraries as well. And so there are a lot of things you can do to leverage your code across both. We did a presentation at Build 2012 on this. It's online. I can point people at it if you're interested in seeing it. But it also applies here in location, because what happened In Windows Phone 8, we added a new Windows runtime-based location API. And it's very similar to the location API on desktop Windows. And what that means is that if you're building applications for both, you can leverage the same code in applications both for Windows Phone as well as for desktop Windows. That's not the only thing we did, though. And so what you're looking at here are all the APIs that are available in location for Windows Phone, the categories of scenarios that you can deliver with those APIs. And we have two classes of APIs here. We have the .NET APIs and the Windows Runtime APIs. The .NET APIs are the ones that are from our previous offering, from Windows Phone 7. And it was very important for us to bring these forward. Obviously, one of the really important things for us is that existing applications would run on Windows Phone 8. And so we designed Windows Phone 8 to run all existing apps. That means that all of those APIs are still available. And the location API is included here. This is the .NET location API. It's not something that we recommend you continue to use in new applications for Windows Phone 8 because we've added a much richer and more powerful API in this new Windows runtime-based API. And I'll talk about that a little bit here. So with the .NET API, you could track your location. You could set an accuracy of the reading that you wanted. And just actually to recap, I need to step back a second here because I just want to make sure everyone understands how this works. The location API abstracts away from the developer the type of mechanism that's used to get that location information. As a developer, you want to get a latitude and a longitude usually. And there are a lot of different, there are three main ways to do that on the phone. There's GPS, which is the most accurate mechanism, but it's also really slow and it doesn't necessarily work inside because you need to have line of sight. There's Wi-Fi ID and then there's cell ID. And what Wi-Fi ID and cell ID information corresponds back to a database that, and there's a number of different companies that provide this service, but using Wi-Fi ID information or cell ID information, triangulating cell tower information, we can derive latitude and longitude. Well, as a developer, you don't want to necessarily have to worry about all three of these things. And so what we've done is we created a single location API back in Windows Phone 7. And you call the location API, you say what accuracy you want, and it returns latitude and longitude. So it radically simplifies this. You don't have to think about what mechanism you're using. And in the .NET API, it did have some limitations. You had to start location tracking, and then you could say what amount of position change at which you would fire a new location event. And for turn-by-turn navigation, this becomes really important. Then you'd have an event that fires on the status being changed, and you could start and stop it. And that's about all you could do, really, with that .NET API. Our new Windows Runtime API, on the other hand, it supports both periodic as well as distance-based tracking, and you can also do a single location request. And this is, there are a lot of applications that don't need to maintain and continue to get that information about location. They just want to go once. Say you want to check in on a social networking site and you want to show your location. That's a single instance. So you only need to have one location request, and you can do that now. It also supports your own control of the cache and the timeout information. And so what that means is that you could actually tell the API you only want, you can receive cached information until it's an hour old, you could say. So that could, you know, that may be more time than you would use, but that could really accelerate the rate that your app works. If there's a cached information, it could just get that first. And you can also determine the position source now and control the position source. So if you only want GPS information, you can say that now. You couldn't say that before. So for these reasons and a lot of others, and the fact that the Windows Runtime API maps very closely to the one on desktop Windows, we really recommend new applications leverage this new API. And so here's a little bit of an example about how you would use our new API to track your location. And really the key thing here, once we've created a geolocator object, that's, you know, the new object type here is the geolocator object. And you can either set a threshold or you can say report interval. So You could do either one. You could either, and threshold will control. So if you actually do both, it will go with threshold on movement. And then report interval here, you're defining amount of time between pings and reporting of the position. Then you actually set a delegate on the position change handler, and then an event for position change. So then you can actually dictate some behavior on the position being changed. You don't start and stop this API. The API actually starts when you set that delegate to the event. It stops when you actually remove the event. So that's we're actually removing the handler at the bottom there, and that stops. And it's actually important to start and stop location service. It can the GPS uses a lot of power. Applications on the phone need to be very aware of power consumption. Now here's how you do a single location request with our API. With the geolocation object, geolocator object, you actually just set the desired accuracy. And this is an example of how you would use the cache. Because what we're saying here, the first parameter is the cache value, the second parameter is the timeout. And one important factor to be aware of is how timeout will correspond to accuracy. Because if you set a very short timeout, say you set a timeout of 10 seconds, but you want accuracy of like 5, the problem might be that the API will time out before you can get an accuracy. The higher the accuracy, the longer amount of time it will take to get that position fix. And so you have to set the timeout in a way that corresponds to the actual accuracy that you want, something that is important to keep in mind. And here you just return the coordinate. So, you know, some basic tips here around using this API. I think I mentioned some of these things here, but use a single location request when you can. Leverage caching for faster results and power consumption, minimizing power consumption. And consider the trade-offs between accuracy and timeout. And you also may want to perform some behavior based on whether or not Wi-Fi is on. Because users sometimes turn Wi-Fi on or off, you can actually do a check to see if that's on and change your behavior based on whether or not it's on. And even prompt the user to turn it on if you want to. Wi-Fi generally has better accuracy than cell tower ID triangulation. So that's just something to keep in mind. Let's move on to the map control. I don't think the location API, I actually think these things almost always have to go together. The location API by itself is not necessarily that interesting. People love maps. And with the new map control, we have a much, much more rich experience for users that maps exactly to the first party map experience that we deliver on the phone. Because maps on Windows Phone 8 are now fueled by the Nokia mapping service. And this is a service that's available in 110 countries right now. It uses vector-based map service, so it's actually much faster. 3D landmarks are available. This is an example of what 3D landmarks look like here. And there are several new map modes as well. So we have a terrain view. We have this 3D view. We have a pedestrian focused view. And that and all the features of the original maps as well. And the ability to store offline. And there's a single cache on the device for storing offline maps that's leveraged by the map control and all of the applications on the device as well. So an end user can say, I want the map for Central Russia, and that will then be cached on the device, and they can use it offline. And this is great for people who do international travel because you don't want to pay for that data when you're moving around in a foreign country. The control is actually much more performant than the Bing Maps control. If any of you are familiar with the Bing Maps control in Windows Phone 7, this control is substantially improved. And it also gives you very quick access to route display. And you can use an API to draw routes directly in the context of the map control. Now, you have the map control itself, and then you have the services behind the map control. And obviously, the vector-based imagery is one the most important one. But in addition to that, we've got geocoding here. So that means actually taking a latitude and longitude and mapping it to an address. Reverse geocoding, If you give it an address, it'll come back with latitude and longitude and the routing functionality. So it'll actually compute a route between two spots. So if you give it any two positions, it can compute a route and send you back the legs of that route and the maneuvers with which you can do all sorts of different things. So a couple of important things to note here. There's a new capability that you have to set on your application around mapping. If you don't set that, you get a very cryptic error message back. So you have to make sure to set that before you start building a map application. Now, in the Bing Maps control, if you wanted to publish that app, you had to actually go get a key from the Bing Maps service on a specific website. That's now changed. You do need a developer token when you publish. You don't need one to develop. You can develop your app with a map control. You can deploy it to the emulator. You can deploy it to devices that have been developer unlocked without any problem. But if you want to deploy to a not developer unlocked device, you have to get this developer token. And you now do that through our developer center. So when you have a developer account, so that means you do have to have a developer account to build a fully functioning, publishable map application. And when you publish an app in the Dev Center, one of the items you'll see in the list of items is a get map key, and that will allow you to get a map key for an application. You do have to start the process of submitting the app, though, so it is a little counterintuitive. The next thing I want to mention is this map toolkit extensions. We have had a long tradition with Silverlight of publishing an out-of-band package of controls, the Silverlight toolkit. And that continues now with the Windows Phone Toolkit at phone.codeplex.com. There's an important component that's shipping in the Phone Toolkit that's a map extension, set of map extensions. And these are a number of really critical things that didn't actually make it into the shipping product in time. They will eventually. But there's a user control for the maps. There's a push pin control. And 2 geocoordinate is important because the map control actually consumes geocoordinate objects. Geocoordinate was our, if you used our old location API, that's the object returned by our old location API, which is slightly different from the geolocator object, the new one. So this 2 geocoordinate object will actually do the translation for you. And so you can go get the, you really want to get the toolkit because that will make it very, very easy to go from the new location API to the map control. So let me move over here and give you a little demo of what development for maps in Windows Phone looks like. So what I have here is a demo map application that will show some of the functionality that we've just been talking about. And let's take a look at the XAML. This is actually the C# behind the main page. Here's the XAML behind the main page. And you can actually look at this here to see the application itself. This initial application that we start with here is a default template of the list view. And so we built this sample code based on this because we thought we'd just add location data to the list items and to make a way to create an application that tracks store locations and gives you directions to store locations. So one of the first things, we're not gonna use this list view. So one of the first things I'm gonna do here is comment that out and then uncomment. Here's my map control. And I'm going to just give you a little overview of what's going on here. So you can also drag and drop the map control over. But you'll see here, I've just added a XAML map control here. And it's got some children on it. This is this user location marker that this is actually in that user object. What this gives you is a diamond shape that can represent the location of the user. It's the same diamond shape that we use in our map app. And then stores, this is actually here where we're going to define the push pins for the stores. And we're binding them to the data in the list. And if we go to the C sharp, you can actually, let me just quickly show you in the view model here. So this is the view model where that actual list is defined. And what we've done here at the end, you'll see we've added location points. This is hard-coded location points just for the sake of this demo. And in average use, you'd probably be pulling an internet service for those locations. We're also defining our current location here. Because this is about demonstrating the map control, we're not going to go in depth in location in this sample. I did show you how you would use the location object to do that. If I go to the C sharp for my main page, there's some initialization that's going on with the map. This map extension setup, we give this to you for free. It's just giving you, this does some of the initialization of the map control items that come with the toolkit. Here's where we're setting the source for the stores to the view model. Here's where we're getting the location of the user from the view model. And this data drop pin, I don't have time to do the pin demo. This whole sample is going to be online in the next couple days. There's another demonstration here about how to use the drop pins. So if I go down here, here's how I'm controlling the actual view that comes up in the map control. And, you know, setting the view and the content panel here to 14. 14 brings us up much closer. By default, you're very, very far out. In step three, here we're actually going to, I mentioned you need to get a key. Here's where I'm actually inputting my application ID and token for my use of the map control commercially. And I think that's all I'm going to show in here for this part of the example. What we're going to have happen when I click on these items is, let's actually just take a look at what this looks like right now. Don't need that yet. So I'm compiling and deploying. And here's my map control zoomed into level 14. And you'll see it's created items. It's created my location as that me point. And it's also created push pins for each of the items that I defined. And what I want to have happen here is I want to be able to click on an item and then have it actually go to a details page. And so when I click on an item, here, and you'll see this is already implemented. It goes to a details page. I'll show you how that works in the code here. Here's where that's happening here. I call the navigation service with the details page, and I send it the selected item. And here it's getting, from the view model, the data context on the push pin. So that actually then launches that page with that parameter information. Oops, wrong demo. Now, another thing that you can do is you can then use that information to do other things. And so what I have an example of here is how you could actually use another application like Nokia Drive to plot a route. If you wanted to call out to Nokia Drive. A new feature in Windows Phone 8 is app-to-app communication. My colleague Cliff is going to talk about that tomorrow in depth. But what this enables you to do is call other applications. An application developer can register itself as owning a particular protocol. And then other applications can call that protocol and send parameters to that application. So this is an example of how you would do that. From the details page, if I go into my details page, you'll see here all I'm doing here is I've got my drive item here. But then on the C sharp for that page, I'm taking the latitude longitude information that was passed to the page, and I'm converting it to a string, and I'm encoding it in a URI with this MS drive2 protocol handler. that was previously registered to Nokia Drive. And that enables me to click here, and you'll see I don't have Nokia Drive installed in the emulator, but I do have a little stub, but you'll see it's trying to launch the application, and that's how that works. So let's go back to the presentation. There we go. Now, I also mentioned that we have the map API from 7x, the 7x map control. And we really don't recommend that you continue to use this in 8.0 applications, just simply because the new one has so many more features. But you can still call this from 7apps. And if you need to use that map control of the task, both of them continue to be there. Of course, if you're building 7x applications, you want to continue to use these. So what does this all mean? You know, we've got the new control and the new services powered by Nokia, by the Nokia services. We've got this toolkit. You really, really should get the toolkit when you're going to go use these services. And users can manage offline maps. The big map control is basically deprecated at this point for new applications for Windows Phone. So let's move on to the next big feature here, location tracking in the background. This is huge. The ability, you know, in many ways, these location apps, I know that I personally like to use a running tracker application on the phone. And it's very frustrating if I want to move away, if I stop for a second to go check some mail or get a text message or whatever, and it puts my app in the background and it doesn't necessarily handle it correctly and you're out of luck. So having location tracking is critical to any mature application platform providing location services to the phone. So that's what we're adding here. And how do you use this? Well, essentially the key here is adding a new manifest item. And the new manifest item here goes into the default task. Under background execution, you just say location tracking. That's not the only criteria though. Your app must actively be listening for location change events, either the old location API or the new location API. If you don't meet that criteria, you won't be able to run in the background using this execution type. It applies to XAML apps only. So in Windows Phone 8, we now have support for D3D games, native games with no XAML at all. You can also write XAML apps that wrap a D3D experience. And in that case, you essentially have a XAML app and you could use background location. Only one location tracking app can run in the background at a time. If you start a new location tracking app that wants to run in the background, it will push the other one out of the background and pause it. And then the final thing to keep in mind here is that the app will run with limited access to resources. You can't access, when you're running in the background, you cannot access every aspect of the device. And I'll talk to you a little bit about that now. The CPU allocation is capped at 10%. One of the things that we took into account when enabling background tasks is the fact that we don't want those tasks to impact the end user experience. It's critical for us in Windows Phone that end users always have a great experience with the phone. It doesn't feel laggy. There's no impact on battery life. And so we enable these background experiences in ways that we think satisfy the needs of the experience, but also provide the user the experience, the end user experience that we think they need to have while that background task is taking place. That app running in the background can continue to access location, of course, but you can also access audio and speech, networking, storage, and sensors. No access to the camera or microphone. That's for privacy purposes. We don't want a malicious application to be recording you without you knowing about it. You also have access to Shell Toast and Shell Tile Update because we think one of the ways that background app, even though it's continuing to run in the background, you may want it to update you with information. And so that's what we're talking about here. And I actually, I'll show you an example of that in a minute. Now, other things you need to be aware of here. There's a capability, location capability. If you don't add location capability to your app, the app is not going to compile. Users can close the running app. There's this background tasks, control panel. And this has existed since 7.5, since we added multitasking. In this control panel, every application that performs a background operation is listed, and the user can actually go there and affirmatively cancel the application and close it. So they have the ability to do that, and they can also disable background functionality altogether for your app. There are ways for you to detect this in your app, and you should respond to them. So if you try to go into the background, for example, and you notice that the user has prevented you from doing so, you can throw up a dialogue saying, oh, by the way, you prevented me from doing this. There's this great feature. You should go fix that. Now, even though you're running in the background, there are cases in which your app will be closed. And so if the app stops tracking location, you'll be closed. If the user disables, so this is not, this whole background execution is not really meant for that single execution, the single finding of a point, because it's much, much more about the continuous location tracking. If the app is not brought to the foreground within 4 hours, we're making the decision that the user doesn't care anymore and we're going to close the app. If the battery saver comes on, we close your app because background processes are turned off when the battery saver comes on. And if another location tracking app moves to the background, like we said a little bit ago, this app will be closed. And low memory conditions, your app will be closed too. There's a complicated set of rules. We've actually written about it before that our out-of-memory manager uses to close last opened app. Every app that's on the backstack or tombstone is going to be closed before it actually closes this background process, but it will be closed at some point. And you can notify the user if you're being closed. So this is something else that in your application you should be checking for. Am I getting closed? And if I'm getting closed, you can notify the user, hey, I'm being closed. You're not going to be able to do this anymore. So let's take a look at what this looks like. So here's my emulator, and on the right, I have a little tool that lets you emulate location. And you'll be familiar with this if you use it. It's available today. Really important tool, obviously, because you don't want to carry your laptop around with you while you're debugging in a car or whatever. You need to be able to debug these applications, so obviously a tool like this is required to do that. I have this application here called Endomondo. It's from a Danish corporation that has, you know, given us permission to show this app that's been updated to support background execution. So if I launch that app, so this is not released yet, by the way. This is their next version. And it defaults back to Seattle, so I'm going to do this in Seattle. And I'm basically just plotting out a potential run that I might take. Turn off live, start Endomondo. Log in. Test account. And here we go. So I've started tracking my movement. And then I'm going to start the actual movement. And you should be able to hear this.
One mile in 9 seconds.
I'm a pretty good runner.
2 miles in
I'm getting faster. So this is an example of how a location application can use audio feedback. Now, what happens if I put it in the background and then start my run again? And so you get the idea.
5 miles in 48 seconds. Lap time, 6 seconds.
Now, the last thing I wanted to show you here is the fact that these guys are trying to do the right thing as developers. They're trying to actually give the user useful prompts and useful information when they do things that disables their functionality. So say I'm a user and I just decided that I don't like my phone knowing where I am, so I'm going to turn off location even though I'm on a run. I know it's highly unlikely. And so they're capturing that event, throwing a toast, and telling you, you know, something happened, I don't have location information anymore. And so I think that's a huge improvement to the location, to be able to run in the background that way. I don't know about you, but I think that really makes those apps usable in a way that they aren't today in some cases. And so we're really excited to bring that in Windows Phone 8. We took advantage of some lifecycle events here. So that means there were changes to our lifecycle. I'm going to talk about that really briefly here. The new lifecycle event here is running in background. And you find out when you're activated, and you can find out when you're closed. What does that look like? You've probably seen this. If you've seen any of our talks, you've seen this diagram before of the application lifecycle. Today, without background execution in 7X, the application will be deactivated and then suspended and tombstoned if necessary at some point. And so that's what happens when the phone needs resources. The phone will suspend the application if it needs the resources and then tombstone it eventually. What happens now with location tracking is that we have this new state running in background. And when the running in background event fires, you go into the running in background state and you can go back to being activated. But you can also be tombstone. So these are things that you just need to keep in mind when building these applications. And here's another view of what happens here. You're not running, you're launched, you're launching, you're running, you're closing. And when you add running in background here, that's yet another event that takes place, and you can be closed. So use sound and toast wisely. Because you don't have access to the UI, doesn't mean you shouldn't inform the user of what's going on. The user, we actually strongly recommend you go further. Inform the user about other events that impact the behavior of the app. If you have processes going on other threads that are using up cycles that aren't necessary to the background process, we recommend that you pause those because those can use battery and processor time, and you probably want to minimize all extraneous activity when your application is running in the background, because that will minimize the chance that your background process will get tombstone. You want to optimize for fast resume, and that may lead you to ask, what's fast resume? Well, we're going to talk a little bit about that now. If you've used our phone at all, you know there's something that many people have said is a little bit quirky. We have a big reliance on the back key. When you launch an application, say I launch an application, like my location app, and I get a phone call, and I go to that phone call, and then I need to go to my calendar, so I hit start and I go to my calendar. Then I'm done looking at my calendar, and I want to go back to my location tracking app, what do I do? Well, what we've been telling people to do is you hit back, 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 back. through all the pages. And what people increasingly told us is that they really much rather just hit start and then hit the tile to launch the app again. But what they see happen in third-party apps is that that will launch a new instance of the app. Fast Resume, I mean, I'm pleased to announce, if you hadn't heard this yet, we now allow you to opt out of that behavior. And with Fast Resume, hitting start again and hitting the icon for the application will actually open up an existing process exactly where it is. So I mean, we're really excited to be able to do this. I you know, look, there's a tension between trying to have a particular user experience model, and the back key really played a role in that. And there are cases where you do want to have a new instance, and there are benefits to having a new instance launched. You know, memory leaks are real. And anyone who writes applications know that it's very easy to have a situation where a bug may actually cause a leak that takes up a lot of resources. Relaunching the application means that initial process was broken down, and those leaks won't be as noticeable to the end user. So one thing Fast Resume means is that it's going to be much more important as programmers to be more careful about our memory usage and resource usage, because if you're attaching to an existing process, your application is going to be a little bit more susceptible to certain types of bugs. Fast Resume can be used for any application in 8.0. But it's particularly useful for location tracking apps, we think, because obviously if I relaunch Endomondo, I don't want to go back. I don't want to create a new process of Endomondo. So the way that you indicate you want to be a Fast Resume application is with the default task in the app manifest. You use this new property activation policy, and you set it to resume. By default, it's restart. And if there's nothing, it's restart. We default to the current behavior. And your application can still get tombstone or suspended, which means that it will take longer for that instance to resume, but it will still resume as opposed to launching. Now, there are some caveats here. There's a few things, gotchas, that you need to be aware of, and I'm going to actually spend a minute here to show you how you would leverage this. But first, you know, we asked ourselves, what was the ideal experience here? Because we expect that most people who click on that icon again want to go back to exactly where they were. And even though we're opening up that existing process, the default behavior continues to do that. And so we had to make a change. There's actually a small bit of code that you want to add to your application. We have got a sample on it. I'll point you to it. I'm going to show you how this works to actually cancel that navigation in the instance where we know the user is relaunching the app or wants to go back to that existing process with Fast Resume. The second question here is around secondary tiles. I don't know if you know this. In 7.5, we added the ability to add secondary tiles to the home screen. This is very useful in instances where you have multiple types of objects people might want to be tracking, like stock information. Say I want to track multiple stocks on my home page. So if I click on the stock quote tile for one company, I don't want to go back to a previous process of that application if it's running. I want to go to the new one. I want to go to the one for that tile. The other peculiarity there is that hitting back will actually take me to the back stack that I had before. So that's also going to be confusing. There are going to be instances where you want to make sure people can get back out. We know that some developers have leveraged overriding the back key. In certain instances, this is going to cause problems. So we want to make sure that we're doubly clear that you shouldn't be blocking on back key press, because that's how users are going to be able to close your app. They can no longer close your app by clicking on the tile and creating a new instance. I just want to show you a little bit what this looks like to try to make it as clear as possible. If you don't do anything but add Fast Resume and I launch Facebook, the application launches and I get this home pivot. I pan over on the panorama, and I go to Friends. And what that does is that puts the main page on the back stack. And now I'm on the Friends page. I click Start, and the Friends page goes on the back stack. Now, the way that you would expect Fast Resume to work is, if I hit the Facebook tile again, I would go right back to that Friends page, would come back off the back stack. Actually, let's talk about the secondary tile issue first here. With my secondary tile, I click it, and I do go to a new instance of that secondary tile, but I have the old back stack. So when the user hits back, they're in for the surprise that they have all these pages that they have to go back through. So that's kind of confusing. Now, the other issue here, now the way that you solve that problem is by clearing the back stack. And so you clear the back stack when the user goes to that secondary tile. You detect that they're launching a secondary tile, and you can clear the back stack. And then that means going back will actually just take them back here. Canceling navigation. You know, I have this back stack, same instance as before, two pages of the application on the back stack. I click the tile. Because default task is associated with main page, the default task is going to actually try to launch the app again, the first page of the app again, on top of this old instance, but the first page again. So what you want to have happen is cancel that navigation. Canceling the navigation to the new page means you'll go back right to the last page that was displayed. So here are the events that you need to be aware of. Reset, new, and refresh. Reset means the app's being relaunched. That's how you. That's the event that you want to hook on to know that the app's being relaunched. New means a new page is going to be generated. Whereas refresh is where it's trying to launch the exact same page again. And here's a little bit of a walkthrough about how these events take place. I have those two pages on my back stack. I'm in that situation I was in before. And then I am at home, and I click to go back. Well, a reset event is going to be fired by the application because it knows it's getting a request to navigate to a new page. The onNavigated from event will have fired with navigation mode.new, saying, hey, give me a new page. Then I'm going to get another event called onNavigating to with that new page. So what you can do at this on this second event here, this navigation mode.new, is you can cancel the navigation or clear the back stack. And here's how it looks in the two cases we've been talking about. Resume. This is where I want to go to the exact instance that was there before. I cancel the navigation, and that means I go back to that exact page I was on before. Whereas if I want to start a new instance, go to a secondary tile, I would clear the back stack at that point. You just do some detection on each. And let me show you what that looks like. There's a sample. Before I start, let me tell you, there's two ways to do this. You can do it at the root frame layer level, or you can do it at the page level. And the sample in the SDK, the sample that's in the docs, is at the root frame layer. There's also another value that you want to take into consideration here, and that's the amount of time that's passed. If, you know, 3 days have passed since the user has launched, and it probably wouldn't be 3 days, but say 10 hours have passed. If 10 hours have passed since the user last launched that app, they probably don't care about going back to where they were. You could make that decision for them and say on a time basis whether or not you want to actually go back and save the back stack or not. So that's another variable, and that's actually a case that's handled in our SDK documentation. But the first thing you do here is you go into default task, and you just set activation policy equals resume. And if I don't do anything else, I get that situation that we were looking at before. I have this very simple application here. We don't need that anymore. And this very simple app is just going to take me through. It has a secondary tile that I'm going to add really quick here. And then I also am going to add the tile for my demo to make this a little easier and move them both to the top. So if I launch this application, I have a page 2 and a page 3. I can go to page 2, I can go to page 3. If the user clicks start, they want to run the app again. I've turned on activation policy equals resume. I should go back to page 3, but instead I go to main page. And that is because of the ways our XAML applications are set up. Mainpage.xaml is the navigation page associated with the default task. And so you need to capture that and cancel it. The other situation I want to show you here is if I go to page 2, or go to, and say I'm just on page 2, and then I launch to page 3. This is a secondary tile that has a deep link to page 3. It launches page 3, but when I click back, I go to page 2. And so this is another very confusing instance for the user that you want to handle. So I'm going to show you how to handle this on the page level, assuming that you left the app on page 2. The more robust way to do this is at the root frame level. It's more complicated, though, so I'll leave that to you to look at the sample. But there's really just three things I'm going to do here, and I'm setting up a cancel new navigation value, a Boolean, that I'm going to use to actually help me track whether or not I need to cancel the navigation. And what you see here is this is the onNavigated to event, and this is the onNavigating from. Let's talk about onNavigating from first, because that's the one that happens first. And what you see here is if cancel new navigation, if it's true, then I look to see if navigation mode is new, if I'm going to a new page, and that new page is main page, because that means I'm trying to launch that initial tile, that primary tile, and I don't want to go to that, so I'm going to cancel that navigation. So I'm just going to run this. Go to page 2, go to start. My main tile, and go to page 2. So I've just canceled the navigation there. Now the second thing I need to fix, and you'll see that on navigated to here is where I'm setting that value. So that happens, you know, when I know that I've got that request to go to a new page. The second thing I need to fix here is the secondary tile. And this is a problem that is actually now fixed for you in the template. So what we've got in the template, the default template now, here under, what it's got here is this value that I'll uncomment. Root frame navigated, check for reset navigation. And so this is hooking up a new event here to see if it needs to clear the back stack. So check for reset navigation, what that does is it actually goes in here and sets up clear back stack every restart. And what that then does, it removes the event handler to clean up after itself, but it checks if it's not navigation node new and it's not a refresh, that means you're basically launching a new tile, clear the backstack. This is how we clear the backstack. Just a while loop that removes back entries until it's empty. And so it's pretty simple for that one. But these are important things to know if you're going to leverage fast application resume. So page 2, go to page 3, and I'm out because we cleared the back stack. So I hope that doesn't look too complicated to you. Sometimes when it's explained, it seems really, really complicated, but it's really just a couple of small things you need to do to make sure that the user gets the right experience. And I talked about this a lot here. I'm not really going to go into this again here, but don't forget tombstoning. Your application could still get tombstoned, so and you need to test this to make sure it works in your application. So what did we talk about? This new map control and new map services powered by Nokia, powerful new tools, the new location APIs. We want you to use these. Background execution for location apps and faster zoom. Use faster zoom. We think this is an excellent feature. We know people wanted it. It may seem kind of stupid that we're only adding it now, but we're very much driven by trying to create a consistent user experience, and that led us to the decisions we made in the past. Now we're giving you, we heard loud and clear from developers they wanted this type of functionality, so we're adding it in. There's some resources. Like I said, the toolkit extensions are in phone.codeplex.com. You can also add this directly to your project with NuGet. Very easy to add to any existing project. In the library here, WP8 location, these are quick links. You can get the slides later, but you've got quick links here to the direct location in the apps and the documentation. It can be kind of hard to navigate our docs. WP8 location and WP8 location sample, that's where the sample code is. WP8 maps and WP8 map sample is where the map sample is. And then for fast resume, WP8 fast resume and WP8 fast resume sample. So I think we have just 1 minute for questions. I hope that was sort of a whirlwind tour of a topic that could be much, much larger, especially the map piece, because there's so many features in the map. But I'd love to get your questions if I could. Yes. Yes. Can I track a trip longer than 4 hours? Yes, you can. Keep the application can stay in the background as long as it doesn't get tombstoned as a result of memory consumption. So it's just like any other application. It'll go in the background if it has to. And it's not dependent on a particular time criteria. Wait a second. I'm wrong on that. I'm sorry. It's just about running in the background, though. See, if you switch to the foreground, that time limit starts over again. So at any point, if the user is going to check the application at any point, then the background process restarts the clock. Right, that's correct. However, if the user goes back into the foreground, the clock starts again. So we don't think that the decision that we made was that if the user didn't look at the foreground process for over 4 hours, we're making the assumption, maybe it's incorrect, that they don't care anymore. And we're closing it because of resource considerations. So we're trying to make sure, you know, location tracking is expensive from a battery perspective, particularly. So we're trying to weigh those interests. And that's where we are with this iteration. If we're wrong, please let us know. And we take that feedback. You think we're wrong too? Sorry? Okay. Yes. You can absolutely detect the pins and their locations and their proximity and determine a zoom level based on that. And so from a user, you as the developer have to make that decision, how much control you want to take from the user in zooming in and out. If you want to zoom in to a point where there's only 10 showing or something, you can definitely make that call. Thank you very much.